Okay, I think we are officially ready to go. So welcome, everyone. Thanks for calling in to this, what I'm calling the booster class. This is for those of us who are committed to creating the work we love in our lives. And I know from personal experience that this journey can be pretty discouraging, actually. And so I think it's important that we find ways to support each other, to stay inspired and focused. And I actually wanted to lead this call off with what's become a cliche, and it's unfortunate that it has. But the cliche is that, you know, if this isn't about the destination, it's about the journey. And you know, again, it's unfortunate that it has become such a cliche, because when people hear that so much, they tend to you know, kind of discount or trivialize the deep and profound meaning of it. And certainly on this journey of creating the work we love, though, it's so important to keep that in mind. There really is no singular destination to reach. I mean, this is a lifelong process. It's ongoing, it's organic, it's creative, and it's powered by our intention. So there really is value and richness each step along the way if we're willing to see it that way. You know, one of the traps is kind of thinking about creating the work we love as something that happens out in the future, something that, oh, it'll be good when. But the art of this journey is really to see it as a journey and to see it as kind of an ongoing expression of who we are. I look back at my own history, and, you know, I've been really on this journey since day one of my first job out of college, because I started my career as an auditor, and I detested it. My first day on the job, I detested it. And I spent the next, you know, 20 or so years in the corporate world, you know, looking around, trying to find different kinds of jobs and positions that were more satisfying to me. So from one perspective, I could say, boy, I wasted 20 years in the corporate world before I, you know, found the work I love. But that's not really true, because what was really true was that first day on the job when I realized how deeply unhappy I was. In that moment, I formed this intention to create work I really, really liked. I didn't use those words at the time. I wasn't even aware of them, but that's what was really going on. And it was that intention that, you know, kind of motivating me to look around, to try something new, to, you know, to keep migrating through different positions to see if I could get something that was closer to what I really and truly wanted. And so, you know, I could tell the story that I wasted 20 years in the corporate world, but the deeper truth is that this has been the journey I've been on almost since day one, and it just keeps getting bigger and brighter. And each step along the way, I was cultivating greater self-awareness, greater self-trust. I was becoming more and more clear about what I did and didn't want, and also becoming more willing to acknowledge those things and to speak about them and to act on them. I was learning to recognize and trust my own inner voice. So, you know, the whole process is one of expanded self-awareness, self-trust, you know, self-advocacy, you know, really living in and speaking your truth. So, and it continues. So I really did want to emphasize that, you know, so whether you've held this conscious intention to create the work you love for 2 years or 20, what I want most to convey is that you haven't done anything wrong. You haven't wasted any time. The way you choose to see it is what really counts for you. And, in fact, for those of you who have been on this journey for a long time, one of the best exercises I've ever done is to literally tell the story of my work history. So I would encourage you to tell the story of your own work history from this perspective of it's all been perfect. My intention to create work I love has been guiding me all along. And this is what I've learned along the way. This is what I've seen. This is how I've grown. It's a really helpful exercise to do that. Another related concept that I wanted to just to put on the table before we dive into the questions is that creating the work you love isn't about finding the job or the work that will make us happy. It's really about recognizing, honoring, and embodying our true talents and longings and finding ways to express them in our lives and in our work. So it's taking ownership of our talents and gifts and consciously seeking ways to develop them and express them right now in the present. So we don't want to fall into the trap of saying, I'll be happy when. We want to get into the habit of saying, here's who I am now and how I can begin to express this in the world. And that's why I really like to look at this whole thing, creating the work we love, as really a noble path. I mean, I think that we really do serve ourselves in the world when we elevate this entire notion of creating the work we love. It's not just about finding a job. It really is about finding the greatness within us and having the courage to develop it and to share it. So that's my perspective on the whole thing. Okay, now with that, as kind of as a foundation, let me just pause. Are there any comments or questions from that starting point?
Just from Callie, thank you. I mean, the way you said that was very helpful about taking ownership of who you are and expressing that. That was.
Yeah, I think that's really vital to see it that way. Otherwise, it does become kind of, it can feel, you know, just like a discouraging trudge through, you know, through job changes. But when we really take this on as kind of a noble journey of honoring who we are and then committing to treating that with respect and finding ways to express it, I think the whole complexion of it changes. So let me share with you a couple of the questions that came in, two that were sort of similar. I think they came from, you know, a different place. They originated from a slightly different orientation, but they sort of speak to a common theme. I'm sorry, my cat just jumped right on my paper. So those of you who know Toby can appreciate what I'm looking at right now, a big orange cat laid on my papers here. Okay, so... So one person wrote in and said, if I can find the exact wording here, I will share it with you. I have lots of interests, and I can't imagine wanting to do just one of them as a full-time job. And I have no idea how I would even translate it into a job, let alone a full-time one. So that's one thing that a lot of people confront is, geez, there's so many things I like. How do I possibly turn that into work? And then a similar question that came in was around this idea of, isn't creating the work you love, finding your passion, your soul's purpose, aren't those kind of big words? You know, what if you don't have a passion? What if you're not aware of some deep, abiding passion? That kind of feels heavy, and it feels like, oh, geez, I'm falling short somehow. So, again, those two questions, I think, came from a slightly different place, and we can... You know, I can definitely love to hear those of you who sent those questions and hear your further insights. But I think they both speak to this idea of when we use words like finding your calling, following your passion, that kind of thing, it can seem sort of big, you know, overwhelming. Like, gosh, there's not this. You know, I'm not Mozart. I'm not Martha Graham. I don't have this one big, huge talent that's just so overwhelming that there's no other choice that I have. You know, for most of us, we have kind of a lot of interests and talents, and so it's a bit of a more nuanced search. And so the first place I want to go is with respect to that very first question, which was about, I have a lot of interests. I can't even imagine wanting to do any of them full-time. And I know the person who sent that question in, and I get that, but I'm going to take this opportunity to say that there's a lot of possibilities in that kind of a situation. And first, let's step away from the idea of a job and what I call the tyranny of the one perfect thing. Because creating the work you love is really inseparable from creating a life you love. So at any given point, we are ideally balancing those interests that call to us now, and some of them may have money attached to them, some of them may not. In my own life, for many years I had an aerobic studio. I taught fitness classes for years because that's a passion of mine, exercise and physical fitness and health. I no longer have that business, but exercise is still a huge part of my life. So that's an example of an interest of mine that at one point in my life generated income. At this point, it does not. And it's okay, you know, that's all part of the seamless organic flow of things in and out. So definitely want to kind of hold this conversation from the perspective of there doesn't necessarily have to be this one thing that you figure out that you're supposed to do and you do it the rest of your life. You want to think more kind of organically and holistically in terms of in the whole of my life, there are all these things I'm interested in. But right now I'm choosing to put some additional time and energy into this thing. So that's sort of the first for how I want to set that up as a backdrop. Now, in the case where you have a lot of interests, it is possible that one of those interests really could translate into providing income. It's just that we've been so trained to think in very predictable ways about what constitutes work, and we've not been trained to really expand our imagination. So even though on the surface it may seem like, geez, I have a lot of interest, but I don't really think any of them would translate into work, that really may be an assumption that's worth testing. It really might be. A related challenge in this kind of a situation is sometimes you can see, oh, well, this particular thing I'm interested in, that could generate some money, but where we normally go is we focus on all the reasons why it wouldn't work, all the obstacles, all the additional training that we would need, or, you know, all these reasons why not. So a lot of this journey is recognizing how we're viewing something and being willing to challenge the heck out of it. Now, another possibility is that our various interests are just that. They're just interests. They're not passions. They're not a calling. They're not something that we feel, this really authentic desire to pursue in a committed way. Again, a caveat there, though, is sometimes the depth of our own longing to make that commitment may be buried under layers of conditioning and false beliefs. Again, an example from my experience many years ago, like around 1990, I went to a mind-body-spirit conference and I saw Shakti Gawain as the keynote speaker, and I thought, wow, that's the kind of work I want to do. And there she was. She was a speaker, a teacher, a writer. She was coaching people. I mean, she was doing all the stuff that I'm doing now beautifully and in a very accomplished way. And I saw that, and I immediately was attracted to it, immediately. But then I just as immediately shut it down. Like, I couldn't even begin to see that as a possibility for me. So I went right back into the whole mindset about my corporate work and my corporate job, and this is what I was supposed to do. Thankfully, that longing that was ignited, I didn't totally snuff it out. I mean, it kind of burned within me for many, many years. But if you would talk to me back then, I would have just said, oh, that's an interest of mine. You know, oh, yeah, writing, that's an interest of mine. I wouldn't have even recognized it as a burning longing because I had buried it so quickly and so completely under all of my beliefs about what work really is. So where does that leave us? You know, so how do we know what to pursue and what not to pursue? are these interests that I have potentially a deep longing? Are they not? If I have several of them, how do I choose? So the first place to start is simply by acknowledging that you have a clear intention for self-discovery. This is what this journey really is all about. So take the pressure off of yourself to figure it all out right now. And, you know, again, let this become your journey of self-discovery. And I would definitely, you know, as an exercise, if you do have several areas of interest, none of them perhaps feel like a deep passion, but maybe they do, you know, one of the first places to start is to get together with someone who can brainstorm with you and pick each one of your areas of interest and really kind of, you know, blow it up, expand it. What are some of the ways you could imagine this potentially becoming paid work? Like, really just, you know, take the walls down, go crazy, play with ideas. You know, the idea here is in this exercise to really challenge, you know, the kind of views of the world that we have about what constitutes a job, what constitutes work, and what doesn't. So that's the kind of thing that's really helpful to do with someone who's a creative thinker. And in that exercise, you want to agree not to shut down your immediate objections, you know, all the reasons why not. So that's something that I would definitely encourage you to do if you're in a place where you have a lot of interests, you're not really clear which one. Another thing to do, of course, those of you who know me would expect me to say this, is to really sit with your intuitive feel about, of all these things that are of interest to me, is there one that has more of a tingle? Is there one that kind of calls to me right now in my life? Again, for me, that was, at one point, that was exercise. I liked it enough to want to actually invest in it, to want to get certified as an aerobic instructor, to want to teach classes. So that's not true for me today, but it was true for me at that time. So let your intuition guide you to the interest that has the most tingle. Also, just in general, but particularly here, you want to learn how to challenge all of your reasons why not. So when you start to get an idea, start to build some momentum, you notice that what often accompanies that, just as it did for me when I realized, oh, I want the kind of work that Shakti Gawain is doing, and I immediately shut it all down. You learn to recognize that you're shutting it down, learn how to challenge those reasons why not. You really challenge the heck out of them. And also really commit to some quiet time for true self-connection, true self-connection. Because this discernment of what is an interest versus a true passion or calling doesn't happen at the level of your mental analysis. It happens from a much deeper place. So you want to really practice connecting with that deepest part of your being and shifting out of that mental place and really listening to your heart of hearts. And that doesn't just happen in one sitting. You know, that's why this, again, why this is a journey. So you want to really make time in your life. It doesn't have to be gobs of time, but you want to make time in your life for some true self-connection and self-reflection. And also, I think when we're talking about creating the work we love, you kind of this deep sense of this is the work I really want to do. We do want to look for something other than just an interest. We want to see if we can find that deeper level of calling. We want to find the longings. We want to find the places that really do speak to us, speak at our core. You know, when I think back to myself as a child, I was always interested in who are we and why are we here? What's the nature of reality? I was always a truth seeker and always wanted to be a teacher, so those things have been with me for a very, very long time, and they have really shaped the content and the direction of my work. So what I'm talking about is the need to really connect with who you are, your essential qualities and talents and longings, and letting them inform and guide what you do. And normally, we jump right into, what can I do? What should I do? Without really giving ourselves the gift of discovering who we are. So let me again pause and just check in and see how that's resonating with you or not and what questions it might be bringing up.
Suzanne?
Yeah.
This is Deborah. I have a question.
Yeah.
So I realize there's a little bit of a trap here, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. When you said commit to some quiet time for self-discovery, I don't want to, like, I don't want you to tell me 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but I find that particular process is really comes in waves for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm just wondering if you could speak just a little more without, like, giving specific times about how that has worked for you or has worked for other people?
You know, that's a great question. So what's worked, I'll start with what's worked for me, because I think there probably was a time when I was probably less disciplined about it than I am now. But so what I've discovered is that I really do need to set aside a certain amount of time every day. And the extent that I can, the same time every day, to sit quietly. I do a combination of journaling and prayer and meditation. Sometimes not all three, but some combination of those three every single day in the morning and then again at night. And again, not to make a rigid formula out of it, but I kept hearing from other people whom I respect and trust and who are living lives that I find inspiring that very thing, that daily commitment to self-connection, was a real anchor for them. And so I sort of took it, you know, let me explore that for myself. And I have found that to be, it's hard to really put it into words, but I think anchor is the closest thing. It is an anchor. And it's a chance to kind of reset, because on any given day, like today when all my technical problems were driving me crazy and I had clients canceling right and left, and it's just easy to kind of spiral into a story about what's going on and what it means. And but I know, like, I actually look forward to that time. I know during that morning time I can kind of reset, come back to center, come back to a clear place, and then, you know, live my day from there. So, which is not to say that it doesn't ebb and flow. I mean, there are some days that I'll spend 45 minutes. Other days I can just barely get 15. But 15 is my minimum. So I've just come to really appreciate that as a practice and an intention. And again, have heard from others that they have the same experience. So it's something that I really do strongly encourage. Did that answer your question, Deborah?
Yeah, it does answer my question. Yes, thank you.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Are there other questions? Is there anyone else on the call that has that same kind of question about, well, I have a lot of things that interest me, but not really a deep passion that I know of? Does anybody else have a question around that? Okay. And, you know, one additional thought I wanted to offer around that, and I have to laugh again. I'm not going to identify the person who sent this question unless she wants to be identified, but I loved how she writes, "I know more or less what I like and what I want, but I cannot say I am passionately decided for one thing." And then she adds, you know, with a little wink, "And I'm not 25 or 30, but 45. Couldn't I know by now?" I love that. Yeah, we feel like we're supposed to know. Like this is some of the pressure we put on ourselves. Like we're supposed to, it's supposed to be crystal clear and we're supposed to know. And again, a lot of this is really just an exploration. We have to kind of play with some things and try some things to discover what really is calling to us. But don't ever dismiss what you do know. Like she says, "I know more or less what I like and what I want." That's great. It doesn't have to be a burning passion. But at least you know what you like and what you want, and that's still your beacon. That's still what calls you to move in a certain direction. So you just want to keep honoring what you do know, honor what you do know you like, honor what you do know you want, and let that be, you know, again, what guides you, what provides some direction when you have choices to make. It doesn't have to feel like a big burning passion. You know, sometimes, you know, for many of us, again, this is less about creating the work we love than about creating a life we love. So if you step back and look at the whole of your life, it may be that the work piece just needs some tinkering. You know, like there's some dissatisfaction, want to shift this, correct that, but it may not be about unleashing this huge passion. So just, you know, we just always start where you are and expand from there, but always looking in the direction of what you do know. Because a lot of us get stuck with, well, I don't know. I don't know. Either I don't know what it is, I don't know how to start, you know. So we kind of shut ourselves down with the I don't know stance. But we just need to practice opening ourselves up with, well, given what I do know, what do I feel called to do next? Did somebody just call in or did we lose somebody?
No, Shiri just called in. Hi.
Hello, Shiri. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
So we are just finishing up one of the questions that came in about how to choose among various interests. Okay. Any further questions or thoughts on that from the group before I move to the next question?
No, Suzanne, this is Ivana.
Yeah.
Well, these were my questions. You can identify me or blow up my cover on this. But I just want to say that when you mentioned that we have various interests and we can develop them through life in various works, it's kind of like a soothing concept as opposed to that we have one passion, that some people maybe they know immediately what they want to do in life and they do it, or they have two careers and that's it. And some people maybe are just here for living a passionate life but having various careers
yeah.
And things. And why would that be worse than
exactly than
like someone who knows that, you know, I want to be a violin artist and this is what I wanted when I was 8 and this is what I'm doing all my life.
Exactly. Exactly. I think, you know, we have these images of what it looks like, what it's supposed to look like to have work that we love. And so we, you know, we hold up these, you know, really big examples. People like a Mozart or a Martha Graham or somebody who has such a singular talent that there was no other choice they could make. But most of us aren't that way. so we get a chance to redefine what it means to create work we love. And it does. It happens over time and it, you know, it fluctuates. And, you know, again, like in my life, I had, you know, exercise. I was actually a teacher. I was, you know, I had my own business. I ran an exercise studio, and that was hugely satisfying. And now it's gone. And now I'm doing something else hugely satisfying. So, yeah, it isn't about the one big thing or the one singular thing, and it certainly isn't about the one thing for the rest of our lives. It's really about learning to trust, you know, this moment and the energy that I want to invest in right now. And again, it speaks again to that idea of it's almost more important to know who you are than any particular thing that you might want to do, because that will help guide your choices about what to do. So, you know, again, in my example, at the deepest level, I've always seen myself as a truth seeker, you know, and there isn't a job title called truth seeker. I wish there was, but that's always informed what I bring to a job and the kind of jobs that I want to do. And, you know, in the corporate world, there was only so far I felt that I could go with that. So I ended up, of course, you know, leaving. But it's really helpful, I think, to keep open in your mind and in your heart this question of, well, who am I really? What are my essential qualities? What really speaks to the core of my being? You know, who do I want to be in this world? No matter what the work is I do, who do I want to be while I'm doing it? And there are certain ways that can then guide you in your choices. Okay, so Ivona, thanks for that. I do think I have found it comforting myself to remind myself through every single thing that I have to be. Okay, there was another kind of a related question that came in about, let me see if I can find a specific wording. Okay, yeah, many of the examples I have of people doing what they love are people who work for themselves in a niche they've created. What about folks like myself who know they aren't suited for and don't want to take on working for themselves? How to best find what we love working for an organization? This was my most challenging question. and, you know, again, let me take the opportunity to use it as a jumping-off point for a couple of things. I think, first of all, the person who wrote this, I know, does know herself very well, and so I'm not challenging her assessment that she doesn't want to be an entrepreneur, but I will put it out there on the table that for a lot of us, it may seem like we don't want to be an entrepreneur. I mean, I certainly thought that for years. I saw myself as an employee. I saw myself wanting and needing a regular salary. I saw, you know, there's a lot of things I just assumed to be true about who I am. And so entrepreneur, it was just too far out of my sense of what was possible for me. And what happened for me and what happens for a lot of people who end up starting their own businesses is as they start to get clearer and clearer about what they truly do want, it starts to feel like, well, the best way to get it is to just create it. And then the desire itself creates the momentum to take all these risks and to do things that are way outside of your comfort zone. So, you know, if you're in a place where it seems like being an entrepreneur is really unappealing, you know, by all means, respect that. You know, I'm not trying to encourage you to make yourself wrong about that in any way. Just note that, oh, this is how it feels to me. But also be willing to get curious about it, because sometimes the feelings, while they're real and they're valid, they have some information for us, they aren't always our deepest truth. So sometimes the resistance to being an entrepreneur is actually a form of fear. Sometimes it's for guidance, you know, only you know which it is. But be willing to consider the possibility that, okay, if I wasn't afraid, if I thought I could be successful, would the work itself be something that calls to me? So I just wanted to say that up front. Now, in the case of the person who put this question in, I know that she's very clear that she doesn't want to be an entrepreneur. That doesn't suit who she is. So she's still wondering, is it possible to create work I love within an organization? And the answer has to be yes, right? I mean, it has to be yes. Interestingly, I think it's actually more challenging because you have less immediate direct control. But it's still possible. And I think for those who really do want to just find work within an existing company, then creating the work you love becomes an intention to bring what you love to the work you do. And then also to keep looking for that environment that is best suited to nurturing your talent. So the first piece around bringing what you love to what you do, you know, the many years that I spent in the corporate world, I wasn't happy for a lot of them. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have left. But when I started to recognize what I was good at and what I liked being good at, like including writing, I liked writing, I liked teaching. So I kept looking for opportunities to write and to teach within that environment. I kept volunteering for projects, volunteering for certain kinds of training. I kept, you know, whenever job opportunities came up internally, I would post for the ones that got me closer to doing that kind of work. So, again, and I know not in every company is that level of flexibility, but I think we still have to, you know, be willing to say, I am a steward for my talents. I am a steward for my gifts. It's my responsibility to see them, to honor them, to cultivate them, to find ways to express them. And so, you know, being willing to look right where we are, you know, where can we start bringing what we love to what we do. And I remember when I was at Hercules, I remember I, you know, wrote articles for the newsletter and that kind of thing. So just looking for opportunities, again, to bring what I love to the work I do. The other piece of it, when you're looking to create work you love in an organization, is this piece around, you know, looking for the environment that is best suited to nurturing your talents. And I will be the first to admit this is a place where it's very easy to get resigned or cynical because I think, you know, many of us have experienced what I'll call the negative effects of a very typical corporate environment where the focus is primarily on profit. It's just, for many of us, we've experienced that to be not a nurturing environment. And this is somewhat beyond the scope of the call, but I just wanted to make a suggestion about one way to kind of work with this. First of all, be willing to look outside, right? Be willing to keep spending some quality time and energy on searching what else might be out there, searching other companies, that kind of thing. But also, I think more fundamentally, what's good is to sort of write down your current story. Like, here's what I'm experiencing right now. My boss is a jerk. There's no internal positions open. The economy stinks. I can't find a job outside the economy. But you know, just write down what feels like your box, the box that you're in. And then take a look at which elements you're willing to challenge. Is my boss really a jerk? Maybe that's one you want to challenge. Maybe you want to challenge the view that the economy stinks and you'll never find another job. Maybe. So you want to look for how you're describing your current situation and look for the possibility of creating a different interpretation. Because you just want to find an opening somewhere. Are you willing to change how you see yourself? Are you willing to change how you see someone you work with? Are you willing to change how you view the opportunities outside your company? Are you, you know, so just, you know, be willing to keep looking for places to challenge your interpretation of how things are. And I'm sure you've all heard that expression, you know, when you change how you see something, what you see changes. And it's challenging. I'll be the first to admit how challenging that is. But it's worthy of our practice. And I have a client who she worked for a nonprofit, and the office environment there is sounded just like the one I used to know in the for-profit. You know, it was very political, very negative, you know, a lot of posturing, a lot of blaming. You know, it was kind of almost hostile and toxic. And she ended up, you know, experimenting with changing how she saw things, and she, you know, practiced holding this intention for acceptance and love. She walked into the workplace and just held this really clear intention within her. And honestly, things changed in such a dramatic way. It it impressed even me. And I was the one guiding her through this. So, you know, when she changed how she was in relation to everyone else, her situation changed completely. And at one point I had suggested that she write down, what's the job you'd love to have there? Like, what kind of things would you like to be doing there? And she just wrote them down. She didn't share them with anyone. But a few weeks into this exercise, her boss came to her and said, I've been thinking, I don't think you're properly utilized. Here's the job I want you to do. And it was the job that she had written down.
So, wow.
You know, it kind of shows you the power of our willingness to hold, you know, a positive expectation, to hold a state of being that isn't reactive to the environment that we're in. And that's really hard. I'm the first to say that's really, really hard. But I just like knowing it's possible. So that's what I wanted to share on that particular question, but I'm more than happy to, you know, to respond to something else. Any other questions about that one? Okay. Okay. There was another question. These are all really hard ones. You all really put me to the test that came in. And the question was, how do I keep working on, and in parentheses, spiraling in on, the same issue in my life without feeling like I'm simply doing the same thing over and over again? And I don't know if the rest of you on the call have had this experience, but, you know, so often on any journey, whether it's a relationship journey or creating the work you love journey or, you know, healing issues around money, it seems like we keep getting confronted with the same kinds of situations. Is that familiar to you, what I'm saying? Like the same thing keeps showing up. And it feels like, geez, how many times do I have to revisit this before I heal it or, you know, rise above it or something? And the one thing I wanted to offer tonight is that point I made earlier, that our feelings, like the question was, I feel like I'm simply doing the same thing over and over again. Well, sometimes our feelings, while they are always validly reflecting something, it may not be our deepest truth. Here's a simple example. Sometimes, you know, you'll get home, you're tired, you get home from work, and you say, I don't feel like exercising. And on the surface, you don't feel like exercising. But if you were to pause and reach in more deeply, I bet your body is dying to exercise. It wants to move. But there's a way that you've learned to kind of talk to yourself that kind of talks yourself out of it. So it feels on the surface like, I don't feel like exercising. But that's probably, or could be, just a form of resistance. The deeper truth is, I really want to move. The body really wants to move. So we want to make sure we're paying attention to our feelings, but recognize that they may not be reflecting our deepest truth. In fact, it may be reflecting a variance from our deepest truth. So back to the, you know, the example of, you know, a repeating pattern, here's kind of the irony that one of the reasons that we feel stuck, that we feel that we're doing the same thing over and over again is because we're telling ourselves that story. It's like, oh, here it comes again. Here this thing is again. I'm in the same pattern still. So we're actually creating a story now about the pattern. It's sort of like any label that we can come up with. One of the labels I often use for myself is I'm an introvert. Discovering that I'm an introvert was immensely helpful to me. It was very freeing to learn that there are people like me who are easily overwhelmed, who like a lot of alone time, who really have to manage my energy very carefully. So all that was immensely helpful to me to recognize there was nothing wrong with me. But if I'm not careful, I use that label in a way that limits me. So now I see myself as an introvert rather than somebody who has introverted qualities. And that's one of the places I'm always working in my age. I always want to challenge myself. Who am I really? And so similarly with this pattern, it's easy to recognize a pattern. Oh, here's the darn pattern again. I'm still tracking the same situation. We're seeing ourselves as someone who's in the pattern. And now that's become now our new label, our new lens for ourselves. And sort of the opportunity we have is to step out of it. So let me give you an example. Again, it's non-work related, but it was really powerful for me. One of the patterns in my life has been actually with relationship, where I tend to always attract men who aren't fully available. There's some entanglement with somebody else. Either they're still married, or they're engaged, or they're dating someone else. There's always somebody else in the picture. And what I discovered in my healing work was there was some part of me that kept attracting that, because I wanted to be chosen. I wanted to feel chosen. And the only way to feel chosen is to have, I have to be chosen from amongst, more than one. So that was the false belief. That was the fear that I wanted someone to prove to me that I was worthy of being chosen. So once I'd done that work, I could see, oh, my God, I could feel that fear. I was able to recognize this is what was creating these experiences in my life. But then what I didn't recognize was, so the next time I, attracted a man, there it was again. It's like, my golly, I'm still doing it. I thought I had it all figured out. So I immediately interpreted the current experience through the lens of, I'm a person who has this pattern. And last year, I met someone who was still engaged. The relationship was rocky, but technically still engaged. And my first thought was, I'm doing it again. I'm in the same pattern. And then I was kind of graced with this recognition that, oh, my gosh, if I keep telling myself I'm in this pattern, if I keep seeing myself as that, that's what I will keep creating. So I consciously stepped back away from the pattern. I took myself out of the pattern. I said, you know what? I'm a person who wants to be in a relationship with someone who is fully committed. That's who I am. I'm a person who wants that. Now, given that I want that, what are my choices here? And I ended up suggesting this man call me when he's free and let it go. And maybe that seems like a simplistic example, but the point that I'm wanting to make is that once you've done the work of seeing what creates the pattern, then the work becomes seeing yourself outside of it. It becomes letting the pattern inform who do I really want to be. So in my example, who I was someone who was scared and wanted someone to pick me, choose me. That was the fear in me. Once I saw that, what that enabled me to create was the person I really want to be and who I truly am is someone who wants a partner who's fully committed. That's what I really want. So I began to see myself as someone no longer in a pattern, just someone who knows what she wants.
Cool.
So let me just pause there and see what the reaction is to that. Any thoughts or questions?
I thought you, I like that a lot, the theory. And I was also just wondering, he had another example or could think of something where instead of saying, oh, yeah, here I am in the same pattern again, but seeing even on the outside it appears as though it's the same, finding something different to focus on even within it. So well, like in my situation, I'm feel like I'm repeating, finding an outlet for my talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I could say, well, here we go again. I'm doing some things, but they're not really what I want to be doing, and this is what I was doing before. So I've not really changed something. But on the other hand, I can look at it and say, well, yes, you are, because this particular piece of work you're doing is closer to where you want to be. Or it's doing something, you've chosen this class because you really want to do this topic. so I could find some things that are more aligned with what I like.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's great. And this is not a necessarily easy thing to do, but it is a worthwhile thing to do. So the idea is, as soon as you say, hear yourself saying, "Oh, here it is again. Here's that pattern." Pause and say, "Okay, I'm looking at this situation through the lens of a pattern. Just let's recognize that we're doing it. And maybe the pattern is like not enough money. I never have quite enough money. I'm scraping by. I'm just barely, you know, I'm always in this situation where it's tight." So as soon as you recognize that we're characterizing it as a pattern, what we want to do is just step outside of it. And the first thing to do is attempt to describe it in a more neutral way. Like, just remind yourself, this is a fresh moment. This is a fresh experience. This is a fresh moment. What is true in this moment? And you want to try to put it in language that's really neutral. So, you know, in the money example, rather than, "My gosh, I'm stuck again with not having enough money." What we want to do is, again, just declare, "This is a fresh situation. I'm a new person in this moment. What's true in this moment is I have X number of dollars in my checking account and my bills amount to Y number of dollars." That's the truth. That's the truth in this moment. It's a situation. And then what you want to do is really focus on seeing yourself as someone who knows how to deal with that situation. You're really calling on your deepest level of self-appreciation, your creativity, your resourcefulness. "Well, given that this is so, here's what I see that my options are." Not referencing your past, not referencing yourself in the pattern, but really seeing yourself as someone responding in this moment to the situation.
Mm.
And as you said, you know, it's wonderful to keep, you know, so much of our experience rides on the story we're telling about it. So you, as you suggested, you want to take a look at, is this really the same as it was in the past? No, look, this part's different. No, this is different. This is different.
Right.
I'm different in this way. I have greater awareness of this now. I've made different. So you want to really practice seeing yourself as someone not caught in a pattern, but someone who has grown and changed and expanded and is now making fresh choices.
Mm. Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, and it's practice. I mean, this really takes practice. It really does.
Suzanne, this is Callie. I was just going to offer an image that a teacher of mine had offered before that was helpful for me in this area.
Yeah.
And it's we think of spiral sometimes as going down. We'll think of the spiral as going up.
Yeah, yes.
An upward spiral. And each one of those turns around the spiral kind of looks like you're traversing the same terrain, but you're not. You're higher, or you could see it as deeper. You know, you're taking it to a different level, and some of it's going to look the same, but you're not covering the same territory. I mean, it's definitely different.
Yes, thank you. I use that same imagery a lot. I remind myself of that. But sometimes it really does just feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
So this is just another way that I've learned to say, well, it is the same if I keep telling myself that it is. Like, you know, just to really acknowledge the power of the label itself. I'm in a pattern. And again,
well, I like what you said about the, like, almost use it as a flag for yourself. Like when you hear yourself saying that, okay. What's really true here, you know?
Exactly. What's really true in this moment? Right.
Yeah.
Who have I become? Who do I want to be in response to this? Not I'm still stuck in this pattern, but here's the situation I'm in. Who do I want to be in response to this? Yeah, and again, yeah, and use the situation itself as the flag. And again, and that's why the feeling, like the feeling like, "Oh, God, here it comes again." But the reason the feeling is helpful is that it doesn't feel good. So, you know, something is off. And in this case, what's off is that we're labeling ourselves as someone who's stuck in a pattern, when the deeper truth for all of us is that we are creative beings and that we have, you know, talents and gifts and power within us and all around us that can shift things in any moment. So we want to always be reaching for that deeper truth. And speaking of that piece, something that I have always found helpful because of my interest in fitness and then in energy work is to keep bringing it to your body. So when we think about, you know, a recurring pattern or anything that's uncomfortable, locate it in your body. Where are you feeling the discomfort? Where are you feeling the self-judgment? Where are you feeling the tension? Just notice where that is. And then see if you can find in your body another place, a place that is not affected by that, a place that is more open and calm, and let that be your center of wisdom. And, you know, place your attention there, your awareness there, breathe into there, and, you know, see if that shifts even in a tiny way your perspective. It's helpful to kind of either go into the deep into the hips or maybe into the heart. So you just want to, you know, again, find a place in your body that can open up for you beyond a level of mental reasoning or fear, a different perspective. Okay. There's another question that came in about, okay, here it is. When or what are the signs that it would be best to track something down, what most people would call making something happen, versus allowing or letting the opportunity to come to you? Another great question. So the question is, what are the signs? You know, so how do you know which way to go? How do you know when to be kind of active, I guess, and versus receptive? And this is a place where discernment of feelings is really, really important. You know, the first point I wanted to make with response to that question is, it really is intention that creates movement and flow. So, you know, I could be one of these people that accepts everything. Yeah, life. You know, I'm letting life happen. I usually use the analogy, but that's like an amoeba, like the metaphor of an amoeba. Like you're kind of drifting, you're shapeless, you know, whatever happens is okay. But it's in when you call on an intention, that gives shape and direction to you and to your life. And so that is kind of the force. The force that creates results is intention. Now, in our culture, what we tend to do is we get hyper-focused on action, and we get hyper-focused on will, and I'm going to make it happen in a particular way. And in doing that, we actually sort of we override kind of the natural process that would otherwise be in place if we just stay true to our intention and look for these opportunities and kind of follow the flow. So having said that, though, it's still not always easy to recognize, you know, when to take action, when to really pursue something in particular versus when to kind of sit back, not sit back, but when to kind of let go of an expectation or a result and let opportunities flow in. And so I think for the first place to kind of answer that question for yourself is in terms of feeling. So if I'm trying too hard to make something happen, I usually experience a sense of struggle, which is different than challenge. You know, challenge is actually energizing. Struggle is depleting. So if I'm trying to make something, if I'm feeling a sense of struggle, it may be that I'm trying too hard to make something happen. On the flip side, if you're not doing anything to support your vision, you may experience frustration. And here, an example that came up for me when I looked at that question was when I was first looking to buy the house that I'm in now, I had an immediate heart connection with this house. I knew this was my home. I wanted to be here. But I was very much in a place of, well, if it's meant to be, it'll be. If it's meant to be, it'll be. And I was pretty lackadaisical about it, and there are all kinds of issues with the contract. I mean, there were things that needed to be resolved for the sale to actually go through, and I was just, you know, well, if it's meant to be, it'll be. If it's meant to be, it'll be. If it's meant to be, it'll be. And then one day I got a call from my realtor who was basically saying this thing is falling through, and then I was like, oh, no, no, it can't fall through. That's my house. So that, you know, that kind of like awareness, whoa, I've been too passive, really woke me up, and I stepped into action and realized that in that case what I was being called to learn was to really, you know, stand up for what was true for me and to really honor and step into a very particular thing that felt very right from the get-go. So there are times when, you know, we're perhaps a little too passive, and how, you know, how we know that is things are slipping through our fingers that really matter to us. So there's no formula. There's no formula. You know, what I've learned, you know, in the absence of something that clear, like for me, I saw this house and there was such an immediate resonance, such an immediate, this is my house. It was that clear. So it really made sense for me to take action to support that vision. In many cases, though, I think we serve ourselves better by, again, setting an intention rather than a specific result. So my intention is to create work I love. My intention is to use my writing. My intention is to use my teaching. Think in terms of here's what I can directly create, control, contribute. You know, set an intention around that, and you know, step into that using your, you know, your inner guidance. So what am I called to do with this? You know, so I think it's a little, we keep ourselves open to opportunity when we state our intentions in terms of how we want to be, what talents we want to use, what kinds of experiences we want to have. I mean, it's certainly okay to say, I intend to create work where I'm appreciated. That's different than saying, I demand that you personally appreciate me. But, you know, to really get clear on what we want to create, give, or experience, set our intentions around that rather than set these really overly specific goals. So that's sort of a general guideline. Now, again, every now and again, there's something that's so clear, it becomes a goal and an intention all at once, and you just want to trust it and honor it. But in many cases, I think, again, we serve ourselves better by just holding an intention around who we want to be, what we want to create, give, or experience, and then follow the opportunities that match that. Okay. Any thoughts or questions on that last piece?
That's helpful.
Great. Thank you. Well, it's just after 9. I'm more than happy to stay on the line and answer questions. You know, again, the format of this call was meant to be just this, for you to send me your questions ahead of time and for me to address them. I may not have addressed questions that some of you are holding in your mind that you haven't had a chance to ask, but for sure what I wanted to convey with this call is, as frustrating and difficult as this journey can be and often is, I really do see it as a noble one. I really do see this as a journey of great importance, because when we commit to creating the work we love, what we're really committing to is honoring the best in us and bringing the best in us out to serve the world. And I, you know, that's a really noble calling. And even if it doesn't feel like a calling, again, not to get overly concerned with the largeness of the words, I think any and every effort we make toward expanded self-awareness, self-trust, self-advocacy, you know, it's healing, it's transformative. So as discouraging as it can sometimes be, I hope that each of you will stay, you know, will keep holding this intention and keep seeing how it is guiding you, keep seeing how it is opening things for you, and, you know, and tell your story from the perspective of, wow, this is a really noble intention I'm holding, and look where I've gotten so far. Look at all I've experienced so far because of this intention, and to really, keep letting it light your way.
Your comment that you just made now dovetails with something that I've been thinking about a lot those couple of days, and that's, I was thinking about Wayne Dyer, and when I've heard him speak, it seems to me that a lot of what he talks about, or a lot of who he is that he really appreciates himself. He really values and appreciates his experiences and feels like they're unique, they're very meaningful, and maybe he wants, you know, feels it's important for the world to know about them because it'll help other people in some way. But that seems to me like a quality that he has that
I was feeling like I'm wanting to incorporate a little bit more for myself in the sense of really appreciating, respecting, you know, the experiences that I have.
Yeah.
So I think
your last comment I couldn't agree more, and you're so right. The thing is to see it not just as a quality that he has, but that he's cultivated.
Cultivated, yeah.
You know, and because we all can.
Right.
In fact, we all kind of have to, really. You know, my coach always says to me, he says, "Anne, the world won't value you until you value yourself." That's what part of this is about. It's really learning to recognize, to fully recognize, wow, your talents and gifts, not from an egoic way, not because I'm better than, but wow, it's almost humble. My God, I have been gifted with this, whatever this is. It really is my sacred responsibility to honor that, to develop it, to cultivate it, to share it. I mean, that's why I have it. So, thank you for that, Sherry. That really, I think it's a really important point.
This is Liz. I have to run, but this was really great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Liz. I'm so glad you're able to call in.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a good night, guys.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Anyone else before we conclude the call? Okay, well, listen, thank you so very much for your time and attention and engagement and for the great questions. So hope you got something from this that was useful. And you all know how to reach me with any follow-up thoughts or questions.
Thanks, Suzanne. It was really useful.
Thank
you.
All right,
yeah.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Suzanne. It was really food for thought and love.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.